Hare Krishna. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3. Canto 11, Chapter 3, which is titled Liberation from the Illusory Energy. The conversation between the Navayogendras and Maharaj Nimi is still going on, and they are giving Maharaj Nimi all the instructions that are needed for getting liberated from the illusory energy or Maya. So we are reading from text 39 of that particular section.
Andeshu peshishu taru svavinischiteshu.
Andeshu peshishu taru
svavinischiteshu. Andeshu peshishu taru svavinischiteshu. Prano hi jivam upadavati tatra tatra.
Prano hi jivam upadavati tatra tatra.
Sanneya dindriya gane yamita prasukte.
Sanneya dindriya gane yamita
prasukte. Kutasta asayam vritetas anusmritirna.
Andeshu. In species of life born from eggs.
Peshishu.
In embryos. Tarasu. In plants. Avinishchiteshu. In species of indeterminate origin. Born from perspiration. Prana. Vital air.
Indeed.
Jivam. The soul. Upadhavati. Follows. Tatra tatra. From one species to another.
Sanne.
They are merged.
Yes.
When.
Indriya gane.
All the senses.
Ahami.
The false ego. Cha. Also. Prasupte. In deep sleep. Kutastha.
Unchanging.
Asayam.
Asayam.
The subtle covering of contaminated consciousness.
The
Linga Sharira.
Rite.
Without.
Tat.
Of that.
Anusmriti.
There is.
Subsequent remembrance.
Na.
Or.
Translation. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, others from seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana or vital air remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep without dreaming, the material senses become inactive and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But although the senses, mind and false ego are inactive, one remembers upon waking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manohisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Sadamayam Sadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Naragunathamitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahara.
ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧು ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮಸ್ತುತೆ ಸಪ್ತಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಂಗಿ ರಾಜೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ ಪಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತೃಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರವಸ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ and mind are constantly active. Similarly, when one is sleeping, the false ego recollects one's waking experiences, and thus one experiences dreams or fragments of dreams while sleeping. But in the state of prashupti or deep sleep, both the mind and senses become inactive, and the false ego does not recall the previous experiences or desires. The subtle mind and the false ego are called linga sharira, or the subtle material body. This linga sharira is experienced in the form of temporary material designations, such as I am a rich man, I am a strong man, I am black, I am white, I am American, I am Chinese. The sum total of one's illusory conception of oneself is called ahankar or false ego. And due to this illusory conception of life, the living entity transmigrates from one species of life to another, as clearly explained in Bhagavad Gita. The spirit soul, however, does not change its constitutional position of eternity, knowledge and bliss, although the soul may temporarily forget this position. I repeat this line. The spirit soul, however, does not change its constitutional position of eternity, knowledge and bliss, although the soul may temporarily forget this position. To cite an analogous situation, if one dreams at night that he is walking in the forest, such a dream does not change one's actual position of lying in bed within his apartment. Thus, it is stated in this verse, Kutastha Asayam Rite, despite the transformations of the subtle body, the spirit soul does not change. Therefore, since one remembers peacefully sleeping, although there was no mental or sensual experience, such a memory should be understood to be a vague experience of the spirit soul. So essentially in this verse, it is mentioned that when we are sleeping at that time, when we are awake, at that time our mind and senses are fully active. But when we are sleeping very lightly, that means just when we go to bed and for the first few hours before we get into deep sleep. So when we are sleeping lightly, at that time also, the senses are relatively subdued, but still the false ego is still there. So therefore, whatever impressions the false ego has acquired when that person was awake and doing various activities, the false ego gives back all those impressions when the person is in light sleep. And because of that, we get what is called as dreams. So our dreams may sometimes, many times it may be observed, but sometimes it really has got some relation Maybe we have some exam and therefore we are, you know, again the dream is coming that I am writing the final year paper and I have to get 60% marks, otherwise I will fail or whatever, whatever. So those impressions will still come back. Or, you know, if we are very interested in cricket or something like that, then you will feel as if, you know, after the next fourth batsman, you know, I am the one who has to go and face the English bowlers. Or something like that. With too much, you know, thinking, meditation on that during the daytime. Therefore, it all, you know, haunts back in the night time. And of course, in teenage years, you know, that, you know what comes in the dreams. I don't want to stay here. So all these impressions which we have and these desires which are there in the heart, all these manifest, even when we consciously don't try to think of them, they are there deep inside the heart somewhere and they start manifesting in light sleep. However, it is mentioned that when one is in deep sleep, even this also is not acting. So we don't get dreams. It's there, but we don't feel the activity of, we don't feel the effect of the positive when we are in deep sleep. Okay. But still it is said that even after all these subtle senses, which are called as linga sharira, even after all this is completely dormant, still when we wake up, we have this memory that yes, I was sleeping peacefully. Now where does that come from? Right? We can still feel that yes, I was in bed and I was sleeping very soundly. Somewhere that remembrance is coming, but we don't know where it is coming from. So that is pointing to the soul. So one of the objectives of this verse is to point to the presence of the soul. It is the essential point here is that we are the soul, not the body. So the presence of the soul is shown. More importantly, this verse has been coming very strongly on false ego. It is said that it is because of this false ego or ahankara, it is very difficult to subdue. We feel, I am a strong man, I am black, I am white, I am American, I am Chinese, and so on and so forth. So today, we will spend some time discussing about the various effects of this false ego and how, what our acharyas have said, what the senior devotees or the disciplic succession have advised us on how to overcome this false ego. Personally though, I don't have any qualifications to speak on the subject because I myself am full of false ego and ahankara. So it is more like, you know, purification for my own self when we read the words of the acharyas again and again. And also sorry for disappointing all of you because originally His Holiness Ramaya Swami was supposed to speak. But I think he has gone for some retreat or something like that. Maharaj is here?
No.
He is already left us. Besides, we couldn't hear from him. Please bear with me for the next 45 minutes or so. Okay. So, coming to the subject of false ego, there is a very nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita. All of you know this verse. It's from 7.27. Anyone remember which one? The verse is Ichha Dvesha Samuthena Dvantva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoha Sarge Yanti Parantapa. It's a very famous verse which points to false ego and how the soul is driven by desire and hate. The translation of this verse is also all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by duality from desire and hate. So desire and hate is the explicit manifestation of the presence of false ego within our hearts. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastime of Puranjan Maharaj is given, where Puranjan Maharaj was very much attached to a woman. He was so attached to a woman that he used to meditate on that woman for day and night. And what happened as a result of that, in the next lifetime he has to come back as a woman, and his name, he was born as the daughter of the king of Vaidehi, so his name was Vaidehi, and also he was the wife of King Malayadhija. Now, when Puranjan was born thus in the body of a woman as Vaidehi, and her husband King Malayadhija left his body at that time, Puranjan is lamenting over the loss of her husband, and at that time she had an old friend and the name of that friend is Paramatma. So Paramatma comes and gives lot of instructions to Puranjan. So in the series of verses which come there under Srila Prabhupada's purports, lot of emphasis is laid on this subject matter of false ego and how to overcome this desire and hatred within our hearts. So the acharyas have mentioned that one may show a lot of external symptoms of practicing profound bhakti, but unless one overcomes this false ego, it is very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness and to relish Krishna consciousness. By coming into the association of devotees, by chanting 16 rounds, by following 4 regulative principles, and by following the various rules and regulations prescribed in Pancharatriki Vidhi, and by doing deity worship, all these things, there is anartha nivariti which happens, and by that we slowly come to the platform of nishtha. Nishtha means determination and consistency and predictability in devotion and in behavior. However, unless this false ego leaves, unless we make a concerted effort to overcome this false ego, the acharyas have said, we cannot go beyond the platform of nishtha. We will not be able to relish Krishna consciousness. We will not be able to go to the platform of asakti or attachment and ruchi, which is taste. We will not get taste in bhakti. We will be doing everything. There will be purification happening, but taste will not come because of presence of false ego. For example, I heard in a lecture that if you want to go to Bombay from Calcutta, right, you have a real intense desire to go to Bombay. But unfortunately, you are sitting in a train which goes to Calcutta. Sorry, from Delhi to Bombay, if you are going, then you are sitting in a train which goes to Calcutta. So, your desire is to go to Bombay, but you are sitting in a train which goes to Calcutta. Therefore, despite your hope, your desire, your prayers, and despite the passage of time, you will still not reach Mumbai. Simply because you are sitting in something where you should not be sitting. So, this false ego also sits in our heart like that, and despite our best desire, Prabhuji, I am fed up of this material world, I want to go back to Golok Vrindavan one day and live with Krishna. Many times we say that, right? So despite this desire, sincere desire to go back to Golok Vrindavan, if we are sitting in the train which is going to Calcutta, if we are carrying this false ego, then that is not the ticket to Golok Vrindavan. We end up in the wrong place. I'm not derogating, Calcutta or something like that. Just an example. Nor is it that Bombay is Golok Vrindavan. But there's a nice temple in both the places. Okay. So the acharyas have advised us that we have to consciously try and give up this false ego with determination. Now it is mentioned in the scriptures that this false ego can manifest even in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if he is next to us, this false ego can manifest. And that the ninth pastime is that of Kala Krishna Das in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just next to him, and he was the assistant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. But when Mahaprabhu was touring, I think he was in South India, at that time this Kala Krishna Das came in contact with the Bhattahari women. Bhattahari women were a sect of people who were performing they follow what is called as occult sciences. They used to do all this tantra, mantra and whatever. So when Kala Krishna Das was accompanying Mahaprabhu himself, even he was bewildered, and he started associating with the Bhattahari women, and he strayed away from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never allowed his devotees to fall down. He went and caught him and brought him back from the clutches of the Bhattahari women. So the Lord may go up to any extent to rescue his devotee. However, it is the jiva at any point in time has got a choice. Srila Prabhupada says in Science of Self-Realization that the jiva can either go up or he can go down. He can serve Krishna or he can serve Maya at any point in time. Even when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is really next to him, the choice is there because we are Sakasva Shakti. The choice is never taken away from us. So therefore, because we have this unnecessary choice, if I may say so, therefore we have to be very strongly determined to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once we do that, once we make a concerted effort to give up this false ego, then practicing Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. Otherwise, it is very difficult. That is why it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Hesha Gunamai Mamma Maya Dirotyaya Maam Eva Ye Prapadyante Maya Metantarantite. This divine energy of mind, Maya, is very difficult to overcome. However, if someone has surrendered unto me, then it is very easy to cross this ocean. So one has to understand that false ego is nothing but a part of the subtle body. And that is also a creation of the Lord. Yes, it is not the primary creation, but it is the secondary creation. It is not the internal energy of the Lord. It is an external energy of the Lord in that sense. So it is very much a part of Mahatattva, which we talked about in the last class. So we cannot underestimate the influence of the external energy of the Lord simply because we have taken shelter of the holy name. Because at any point in time, Maya is very powerful and can overcome us. So how does one overcome the influence of this false ego? How does one, despite the influence of the false ego, surrender to the Supreme Lord? What is the process? So this is given in Isopanishad, in the Mantra 1, which is Isavashyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat. So Isavashya, Isha means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the first principle is to accept the presence of Isha. To accept the presence of somebody called as Supreme Controller. Till that time, the false ego will always say that you are the center of the universe, you are the Supreme Controller. So, the first principle is accepting that there is a Supreme Controller of Isha. Accepting Isha also means that accepting that I am a very insignificant soul, but then the Isha or the Supreme Personality of Godhead is someone who is with inconceivable powers. And with these inconceivable powers, the Isha can behave in inconceivable ways also. For example, the Lord can always decide to do something, He can decide not to do something, or He can decide to act otherwise in some totally different way. So it is mentioned in Gopal Tapani Upanishad that
kartum akartum anyata kartum yah samartha sa eva ishvara.
So the Lord can do three things. He can either kartum, do something, or akartum, not do something, or anyata kartum, do something which is totally different to our imagination and our senses.
Kartum, akartum, anyata kartum.
For example, if you go to a restaurant and if there is a menu card says idli, vada, sambar, dosa, pongal, or North Indian, veg biryani, something, then we have a choice within that. So we can do kartum or we can do akartum. I can either choose to eat or I can choose not to eat at all, anything, right? So the Lord has got this potency of kartum, akartum, anyata kartum, and because we are part and parcel, we also have to some degree this kartum and akartum. But what is the difference? There is a difference between when we talk in the context of Lord and in the context of Jiva or the conditioned soul. So we know this famous verse, prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani tapasya ahankara vimudatma kartah iti manyate. So whatever kartaham iti manyate, whatever kartum and akartum that we manifest is actually not our choice. In a sense, we think ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. We think that I am kartum and I am akartum. But actually our kartum and akartum is dictated by the influence of ahankara vimudatma and the three modes of material nature. They are deciding our kartum and akartum. So when we decide to kartum, or when we decide that yes, I want to enjoy, that is kartum, that is also coming under the modes of material nature. And when we decide akartum, that I want to renounce something, okay, I'm going to stop doing this, or I'm not going to go to this place from tomorrow, then that also can be dictated by the false ego. And we'll see how that is dictated by false ego. But the Lord has got inconceivable powers. So the Lord can either kartum, akartum, or anyatha kartum. He can conjure up something which is not there in the menu card in the hotel, whereas we cannot do that. So that is Anyatha Karma. So once Srila Prabhupada was asked a question by some of the devotees, he said, can Lord Krishna create something which is so heavy that nobody can lift it? It's not possible to lift that stone at all. So, the trick in this question was that if Lord can indeed create such a huge stone, that means He is a supreme controller. But if it cannot be lifted by anybody, then that means, you know, there is a problem with the Lord itself. There is some kind of limitation which the Lord has been subjected to. So, Srila Prabhupada said, yes, the Lord can create something which nobody can lift. Neither the devotees can lift, neither He can lift. Kartum, akartum. But then anyata kartum. After doing all this, the Lord will lift it. That is anyata kartum. So Srila Prabhupada said, this is the Ishavashya principle. So we have to accept that the Lord is not an ordinary person. Isha. He is beyond the three modes of material nature and His powers are inconceivable. Having recognized the supremacy of the Lord, Ishavashyam idam sarvam yatchinka jagatyam jagat. Then there is a surrender beginning here. That is in the next two lines. Tena shaktena munjita mahamrata kashyasyajana. So, the translation of this verse is, everything animate and inanimate is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one must accept only one quota. It is mentioned. So the first principle is accepting, yes, there is somebody called as God and He owns everything animate and inanimate. He is the Supreme Controller and the Supreme Proprietor. That is one. Number two is accepting that there is a quota which we have and we cannot take more than that quota. So this acceptance is the first principle of surrender. Acceptance is the first principle of surrender. So it's a very simple phenomenon, but yet it is very deep. And this is an area where the living entity struggles the maximum. For example, we see that many times, despite being in Krishna consciousness, we simply cannot accept the realities that life offers us. We cannot accept. Why is it happening to me? We start questioning, even though we are in Krishna consciousness. Also, we always make plans to change the things of this world. For example, once upon a time, there was a temple. And this is a true story actually. It's an ISKCON temple, it happened. So in one of the temples, the bird had built a nest. So the devotees saw that and there were eggs and whatever, whatever. So they nicely removed the nest, cleared the place and kept it elsewhere, outside the temple. Again next day they saw that the bird had made a nest. Again they cleared it. Again third day they saw. This went on and on and on. So Srila Prabhupada said that this is the symptom of Maya. Though we try to know that the results of our activities are temporary, still we persist again and again and again the same set of activities. So this phenomenon is very simple. How do we do in a white collar manner? We know that the Lehman Brothers has collapsed, the share market has collapsed, people have come to the road, people are committing suicide, they are jumping from the top floor of Wall Street, but still after the cycle is over, we'll go and invest in shares. Thinking that yes, I'll get something out of it. Like that. So our mind is also like that. Despite seeing everything around us, we will not surrender. We will not accept the realities of life. So this quota, tena tyaktena bhajita, this quota what the Lord is talking about, it doesn't only pertain to things as quota. Oh, this is my salary, this is my quota, this is my television, this is my car. Okay, whatever Lord has given, this house, car, wife, everything, that is all fine, child. That is not the only thing that is quota. But it is said that this quota pertains not only to things, but situations that life gives us. For example, you know, now come summer, we will see everyone going, you know, to the beach. And when you ask them, what do you want? They'll say, you know, I have white skin, I want to get tanned. They'll say. So a white man wants to get tanned and have black skin. On the other hand, if you go to India, the person who is having black skin will put fair and lovely cream and try to make himself white. So both things are happening in this world. The point is that we cannot accept the situation which Krishna has given us. We want to change that situation. Right? Somehow or the other. If I'm white, I want black. If I'm black, I want to be white. So things like that. So, and this happens even sometimes after, when we come into devotional service. Okay, we start comparing. Oh, this person has sweet voice. Okay, this person is only serving Guru Maharaj. When Maharaj comes, you know, only this person is with him. Why not me? Am I not qualified? Things like that. So sometimes we still externally say, that, oh Prabhu, I am not qualified or whatever, whatever. This is a very common statement. Prabhu, I am not qualified. And all of us have learned the art of saying this statement very nicely, you know, in this class. But the point here, what the Acharyas is saying, that it is not as if I am not only qualified. Okay? It is important to first accept what I am not qualified for. Internalize that very well. Okay, when I am saying I am not qualified, then at least ask yourself, okay, I am saying I am not qualified, but where do I think that I am not qualified for? Meditate on that. And then internalize that. Then only the false ego will go. So, only, otherwise it will just remain as lip service. And envy will still remain within the heart. So acceptance is the first principle of surrendering the false ego. Now, there are two levels of acceptance. The first level of acceptance is called as Shirodharya. Shirodharya means simply tolerating the mercies. Okay. So in Bhagavad Gita, we have this famous verse, Matra Sparsha Sukha Unteya, Sitoshna Sukha Dukha Raha, Agama Payinu Anitya, Tam Sitiksha Swabharata. Tam Sitiksha Swabharata means what? Sitiksha. Sitiksha means tolerance against Sita and Ushna, and thus against the summer and winter, heat and cold. Right? So we know this verse, very famous verse. And it comes very early on in the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's probably second chapter, right? Yeah, it comes in the second chapter itself. Now, this is one level of acceptance. That yes, heat and cold will be there, this is material world. Material world is Sukhalayam Ashashvatam, everything is going to be like this, all that. And therefore I am enduring. But one of the acharyas was saying that this is a very low level of acceptance. Because this verse, even the Mayavadis know. Even the Mayavadis are tolerating. They also say, yes, this material world is very bad, therefore we should get liberation. Right? So they also say, no, we must tolerate everything in this material world. So this is not a very high level of acceptance. This is acceptance, but it is slightly low level of acceptance. So a higher level of acceptance has been given than this. It has been given in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse number 8. And Chiranjeeva Prabhu always, in his lectures, I have seen that he always quotes this verse. The verse is, Tattenu kampam susimikshamano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam hrit vat vapubhi vidhadam namaste jivetayo muktipade sa dayabhak. So, Tattenu kampam susimikshamano. My dear Lord, the translation is very interesting, the higher level of acceptance. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation. For it has become his rightful claim. So what is the difference between that verse, Tam Sitikshashva Bharata and Tattenu Kampam verse? There, one is simply enduring, like a Mayavadi. Nothing great. It's there. Some merit is there that one is enduring. But here, one is not simply enduring for nothing. Just from a point of view of liberation or just getting out of the misery. Here, one is eagerly awaiting for the Lord's causeless mercy. So we are waiting. Yes, all this is at the end of the day worth going through this whole journey because, my dear Lord, I am going to be with you. Just now we read Shikshashtakam, right? There was one verse which says that I am willing to be treated unconditionally. You are my Supreme Lord. So therefore, treat me in whichever way you want. Where does that come from? That comes from an intense desire that yes, I want to be one with the Lord. So all this is fine. Whatever test that the Lord is giving me, that's all fine. I'll go through it. But I want to be with the Lord. And that is the incentive for a devotee. Whereas for a Mayavadi, he doesn't understand this verse. He'll only go by Tam Sitikshashva Bharata verse. Okay. So the acceptance of the Mayavadi is different and the acceptance of the devotees is indifferent. Srila Prabhupada gives an example that the acceptance of the devotee is like the legitimate son, okay, who is alive and who wants to gain inheritance from the father. Right? How eagerly the person is waiting, yes, I will get all this, the son of a rich father, like that. So, of course, that's a material example, but that is the eagerness for us, you know, waiting and enduring everything, so that we will be with Krishna, the Supreme Father. So, one has to await mercy of the Lord while suffering. And understand that anything, any difficulties that come in our life, after we take to devotional life seriously, is but the personal punishment of the Lord, just to curtail our mentality, which pops up from time to time, here and there, to enjoy this material world. Despite the fact that we are chanting, four regulative principles, everything is there. But still that mentality pops up from time to time. And the Lord gives us a small tonk on our head, now and then. So, the devotee thinks that this is a small price to pay, whatever miseries come, for the personal association of the Lord. And therefore, when he thinks like that, he becomes dayabha. He becomes worthy of the receive of the mercy, to receive the mercy of the Lord. Dayabha. Now, this verse, Tathenu Kampam Sushumiksha Mano, this verse also expresses a major flaw in the philosophy of the modern management gurus. We have seen so many management gurus, C.K. Prahlad, or what is it, Peter Drucker, or what is the new fellow? Khanna, some Khanna. There's a management guru, right? From North India. What's his name? Who writes a lot of books. Spiritual. Deepak Chopra. Yes. So, all these gurus, they are writing hundreds and thousands of books on this subject matter. But essentially, there is a major flaw which this Tathenu Kampam, Sushumikshamano, this verse brings out. In corporate life, these management gurus always come and tell us how we can be great, how we have unlimited potential, how we can do anything, how you can go as high as you like, provided you have the right mental frame, it's all inside the heart. Attitude decides altitude. This is a very famous verse in corporate life.
This is
a
company's motto.
Oh, attitude decides altitude. Okay, that's company's motto. Okay. Very good. Okay, you can be the best in this world. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. So, all these philosophies look very nice in the textbooks of management and to, you know, do a PowerPoint presentation in front of an ignorant audience. But what happens when it comes to actual practice, when we follow all these things, then it creates a very wretched condition for the soul, which is already in misery. Okay. So, you are constantly told that you are the supreme controller, you know, life is in your hands, you can change your attitude, you can become anything if you want, and you can become a person of a very high stature in society. Whereas, the fact of the matter in this Tathenu Kampam verse is that not everything is in our hands anyway. In fact, nothing is in our hands. So this understanding has to come. So, Srila Prabhupada once mentioned that man is so helpless vis-a-vis the cataclysms of this material nature. For example, New Orleans, which is there in America, the wealthiest nation in the world, most opulent nation. One Katrina came and everything was finished. Now, even the helicopter aid took so many days to come and people just died. People are dying on the roads in the most advanced country in the world. So therefore, man is very helpless. All this opulent position, whoever, whichever management guru was there, he himself, you know, would have died of hunger and thirst there. All this philosophy wouldn't work. Yes, go ahead. You can do whatever you want. What can you do? Everything is gone. There is no drinking water, right? There is no water to bath, bathe, drink, there is no food, nothing. So all the management philosophy flies outside the window against the cataclysms of nature. Srila Prabhupada said. So, so our endeavor should be in understanding that there is a supreme controller. Okay, who is the only one who decides the result of our actions. Otherwise, what happens if we simply follow these management gurus and try and, you know, go ahead in life with passion based on the philosophy of these Deepak Chopras and whatever, then when failure comes to us, at that time what happens? Even after following all this, when failure comes, then it results in depression. I followed all this, I am depressed now. Yes, Deepak Chopra was right. It was in my hand to do all these things. That's how the mind will start thinking. Okay. So when failure comes, we become very depressed and frustrated. And we say, you know, I did not choose my response properly. Because in, you know, Stephen Covey says, the first habit of highly effective people is what? Proactivity, choosing your response. So then we say that, no, I didn't choose my response properly, therefore I failed in this project or endeavor. Like that. On the other hand, if success comes, then what happens? it starts going to our head. Yes, I made it with my own effort. So I can now, I am now qualified to be a management guru. I can tell others, you also follow me. I tried it, it worked. I have proved it to the world. I am a self-made man. So if success comes, then one becomes an egomaniac. And then if failure comes, one becomes another type of maniac. Under frustration. Right? So therefore, tatteno kampam sushimikshamana. The first principle of surrender is acceptance. The higher level of acceptance. Bhunjana eva atma kritam vipakam. Atma kritam vipakam means what? That my dear Lord, whatever that I am suffering in this world is because of atma kritam vipakam. Because of the activities of my own soul. I have done lot of fruitive activities in the past. I have sinned in the past. So whatever suffering comes, that I know very well where it is coming from. And I know that whatever success is coming is also because either of because of my karma, or and which was automatically going to come, or because of your mercy on me. Then hridak vak vapudhir vidhadan namaste, which means that oh my Lord, you are giving me all these suffering. I accept all these things within my heart, and with all my heart I offer you obeisances. Vidhadan namaste. This is the highest surrender. This is the higher surrender than the earlier surrender which we talked about. The first level of surrender, Ishavashyam Idam Sarvam, we talked about that. Yep, Kinchya, and then Tena Chakyana Gunjita, we talked about. This is the third higher level of surrender. And then there is a highest level of surrender, even beyond this. And that is enduring my class. Highest level of surrender. We got 3 days. So we'll come to that. By the end of the class, we'll come to what is the highest level of surrender. So, let's analyze now how the jiva falls down and gets bewildered under this false ego which keeps us in this material world. Or how do we train, take the train to Calcutta accidentally? Though we intended to go to Mumbai, how did we get into the train in the first place? Going other direction from Golok Vrindavan. So it's mentioned by the Acharya that when one falls into the false ego, two things start to happen. Ichha and Dvesh. This happens because of false ego. Ichha Dvesha Samutthena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. So Srila Prabhupada explains that one is deluded by Ichha and Dvesh. Or desire and hatred based on what pleases my false ego and what doesn't please my false ego. So that is how Ichha as well as Dvesh comes. So this enjoying propensity was exemplified by Shankarachuda. If you read the 10th canto, then the pastime of Shankarachuda is given. Now the Shankarachuda, he was standing under a tree, and he had under a sal tree, and he had a branch in his hand, and apparently he had a very precious gem on himself. So in the forest, one day when he was standing like that, Lord Krishna, he saw that Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were enjoying with the gopis. So Shankarachuda had such a high amount of degree of false ego that he did not even care that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is standing in front of him. Okay, and he is having pastimes with the gopis. So with impudence, what he said? He said, he lifted the branch and said, "Hey gopis, all of you now come out from there and start moving northwards. Why? Because I want to enjoy with all of you now." Such was his impudence in front of the Lord. So he started taking the gopis away from there. And then the pastime is that then Lord Krishna obviously and Lord Balaram were there. They got extremely upset with Shankarachuda. And then the pastime is how Lord Krishna chased Shankarachuda and then with one blow the Lord killed Shankarachuda. So it is mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's purports there in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that as Shankarachuda was being chased by the Lord, the Shankarachuda looked at the Lord and he saw the Kala Shakti of the Lord, the power of time, which made Shankarachuda behave in that manner in front of the Lord. Even when the Lord is present at that time also, time makes you behave so. So it is, the moral of the story is that if one, as long as we have this lording mentality of the Shankarachuda and we want to enjoy the material nature, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Kala or time can strip us away of all our material accumulation. So, Ichha Dvesha. Such Ichha is ultimately useless. Such desires are ultimately useless because of the power of time. Now come to dvesh, the second aspect of false ego. When, owing to false ego, the materialistic persons, typically the karmis who we see, they become very envious of devotees. Now a materialistic person has everything. And what does a devotee have? A devotee has dhoti, kurta, sometimes that is also, you know, tone. Right? So devotees normally live in very, you know, moderate background or, you know, in a very humble situation. Okay? But still the non-devotees are getting envious of devotees. Why? And they always take an opportunity to fight with the devotees. Now this is because Srila Prabhupada explains that this is because they are frustrated. They are frustrated that even though I am trying my best, I have all these appearances, I have this BMW car, I have this car, I have that bungalow and everything, still happiness is eluding me. And these devotees, this fellow doesn't have anything, he just has one dhoti and kurta, but all the time when I am seeing him, he is smiling and he is dancing, Hari Bol. So they got frustrated on seeing the devotee. How can this be possible? That I know that material nature is where happiness lies. Right? And I am doing my best and I am deriving some taste. But still, despite my conviction, I am not getting the results. Though I am convinced that this is what will give me happiness. But this guy is already getting that happiness even without trying for that. So, frustration and anger towards devotees. So, Satvarup Das Maharaj, Chanakya Pandit has commented on this very interesting verse. He says that maintaining false ego is more dangerous than the venom of a snake. Okay. Because he says that the venom of a snake can be removed by the snake charmer. Okay. And there is a verse also which says by mantra and by aushadhi. By the power of mantra and by aushadhi means medicines, one can cure the venom of, when one can take out the venom of a snake. Right? But there is no mantra and there is no aushadhi for the false ego. So therefore, it devolves on each of us to remove this false ego and throw it out. Now, Satvarup Das Maharaj was commenting on this verse of Chanakya Pandit. And he says that this false ego, when it possesses a man, this materialistic person, then it is like the snake which resides in the holes of a tree. So many times, you know, the snake forms their own group and they reside in a particular tree in a hole, and then whoever tries to come, the snake tries to, you know, come and, you know, say that, okay, don't come here, this is not a place for you, we are the inhabitants of this place, so don't enter our ilaka or our, you know, domain, like that. So similarly, Satyog Saras Maharaj says that the modern day, you know, snakes, the materialistic people, they'll build big bungalows, right, and outside they will keep a dog and they'll keep a board also, beware of dogs. And when sadhus or saints are coming, you know, they will tell the watchman, you know, just kick them out from the entrance door itself. So like that. So these people find it very difficult to surrender to the Lord or his devotees. It is mentioned that even Alexander the Great became angry upon a yogi because he was trying to find pleasure in conquering nation after nation. Alexander the Great. And then he saw one yogi who was peacefully sitting and meditating, who had nothing in himself. And Alexander lost his head on that person, saying that you rascal, you are not doing anything. You good for nothing fellow. He's saying, but I'm very happy. But you are not happy. You have ichcha, dvesh, everything. But I'm very happy. So what is your problem? But Alexander was getting even more angry at him. So, and he started saying that you are a good for nothing fellow. Now, actually it is very difficult doing nothing and still being happy. Which Alexander did not realize. Okay. It is actually amazing. Okay. That despite all our desires, because our desires make us do something or the other. So if a person in this situation is very happy and doing nothing at all, then that is also something. Some kind of an achievement. But of course, it is not the ultimate achievement. Doing nothing. So we cannot say that from tomorrow I will not do anything. Okay. It is some kind of achievement, but not ultimate. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada used to explain in this context, that about envious householders who were getting upset with devotees and who were comparing themselves with devotees, Srila Prabhupada explains that there was a zamindar in Bengal. Okay. This zamindar was very wealthy and he had a, you know, multi-story house in Bengal and he was sitting in the balcony. Srila Prabhupada tells this story and he was looking down at something and his face was extremely morose. So then his wife came and asked him, what happened? You have everything in the world. You have a bungalow, multi-story bungalow. There is a car in the car park. There are two cars in the car park. Right? You have a son who is studying well. You have a very chaste wife. Right? You have everything, whatever life. You have a very healthy bank balance also on top of that. You have finished your mortgage. Now I have decided. So he was saying, that's fine, I have everything. But look at that man who is going down in the street. There is some bliss on his face. And he was seeing one devotee passing. Right? Very happily, blissful face, radiant, smiling. He said, he seems to be not having any kind of worry. And why is it that I don't have what peace of mind that he has? So that is how he was lamenting. Srila Prabhupada used to often tell this particular story about how a householder wants to now, after attaining all that, he wants to give up everything and, you know, and this fellow is saying, I want to be like him. And the example of Bill Gates was given once in one of the lectures, that Bill Gates, being the wealthiest person in the world, what are his innermost desires? So it was mentioned in that class that Bill Gates might also be running around, you know, in the night time and nobody is there, with some funny set of clothes, you know, dancing on the road where nobody can recognize him. Because everyone wants to be free, right, at the end of the day. Always, constantly in the attention of media, people get fed up. And just yesterday, I was watching this serial, Abhay Charan, in the night time. And then Srila Prabhupada was there, in that Abhay Charan, was explaining to a set of audience about Mahatma Gandhi and the suffering which Mahatma Gandhi had. So it was mentioned that Mahatma Gandhi was obviously, he was called as the father of the nation. But he used to get so upset with the kind of attention that he used to get. He had virtually no privacy. Even in at night time when he went to bed for some shanti inside his own heart, people will be standing outside and shouting, Mahatma Gandhi ki jai, Mahatma Gandhi ki jai. Like, so he was totally fed up. You can just imagine, if you are tired, whoever we may be, but if we are tired and we want to sleep, someone comes and tells our own name and says, Aap ki jai ho. And continuously 24 hours, and you say, I want to sleep now. Let's stop it. So Mahatma Gandhi was totally frustrated with that. Okay, on top of that even after he got used to that somehow, then during the end of his life, exactly opposite also happened. Some people used to come and say, Mahatma Gandhi Murdabad, no, death come unto you. No, Mahatma Gandhi. People who have, you know, had the partition and whatever. So somebody is happy with you, somebody is not happy with you. Right? Some people are glorifying and some people want your death. And they are very explicitly telling it on top of your face. They are shouting outside your own house about it. So therefore, this name and fame, this glorification also doesn't give any peace of mind. And this is again the envy of devotees here, non-devotees. In Los Angeles, once when people were going for Harinam, and you know, in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, people used to come on the road and tell the devotees, why are you, you know, dancing like a madman and singing on the road? Why don't you get yourself some job? They used to say. Because they were all running from here to there, no, with a briefcase in their hand. Like in Monday morning, when I go in the tram, I always observe this. Monday morning is really a bad, you know, thing. You know, after a night, weekend, Krishna consciousness, and again, you know, sitting in the tram, and people are running from the Spencer Street, Parliament or whatever. There, some people are running here, some people are running there. Everybody is running somewhere. Right? And you just watch them, and you know, you remember Kadambakkana Swami Maharaj gave an example of the ant in the house. Some ants are running very fast this side and some ants are running fast. Apparently to them it is a very important activity. But as a human being, we are thinking, why is this ant? What is so important? Why is the ant is running from here to there? But then somebody is looking at us and also saying like this. Why are these people running from here to there? Morgan Stanley, Jardine Fleming, somebody running to Infosys, Satyam, Wipro. So, and the non-devotees, they think that when the devotees are chanting nicely Harinam and they are very nicely jumping on the same Monday morning, they think, wow, no, I am struggling, I am going to that office, I am full of stress now, and you rascal, you are not doing anything, you don't have any job, and how dare you have a right to be happy? When for the same happiness, I am going to office now. And I am going to work till Friday, and wait till Friday evening, apparently for that happiness, which will again not be there on Friday evening. Right? So that is how the envy comes. So, most of the materialistic people are under this domain. But then, out of this, there are some people who are more intelligent than these people. These people are the people who inquire about the suffering. They know that no, happiness is not in this Friday night drinks. Right? Because at the end of the day, happiness is temporary in this material world. It's full of suffering. Dukhala mashashvatam. So these people work for the long term and sacrifice the short term. So these people give up the concept even of enjoying in heaven. They know that even heaven is temporary. Okay? So they know that in this material world, we cannot enjoy at all. Everything is temporary. But then, what do they think inside the heart? Outside of this material world, we can enjoy. So they know the futility of enjoying in the material world. But the propensity or the desire to enjoy has not gone away from the heart. So how does that manifest then? Then they say that the ultimate objective of this life is liberation, or to become one with the Supreme Controller. So there was a very interesting statement which I read in this regard. One of the acharyas said that the case is to become the greatest enjoyer. It's a very nice statement. To become the greatest enjoyer by giving up small enjoyment. To become the greatest enjoyer by giving up small enjoyment. So this is the second type of people, more slightly more intelligent than the karmis, or who we call as the mayavadi, or the people who want impersonal liberation. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, in the preface to Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada has written that some people want to be head of family, some people want to be head of society. What we know in Hindi, we call it as dada, head of society, dada hai ilaka ka. And then some people, in mode of goodness, they want to become Bapu, father of the nation. So, but somewhere the desire is there, that some head is there in this whole thing. The desire to enjoy in some form or the other is there. And then some people don't want all the three, but they want to become one with God. So that designation also they want, that I want to be God. I don't want to be Bapu and Dada and all. I'll be God. Higher taste. Okay. So to become the greatest enjoyer by giving up small enjoyment. Therefore, this is the manifestation of Ichha and Dvesh. So the Mayavadis, what happened? Because they have this desire, okay, they want to renounce the fruits which the material world offers. Okay, but at the same time, what happens? The Mayavadis, because they don't have a higher state, they don't have the absolute philosophy. They are neither there nor they are here. They are neither spiritual nor they are able to enjoy this material world. So because of this, what happens? Srila Prabhupada says they have the case of what is called as sour grapes. If I cannot enjoy those grapes, then those grapes are sour. So therefore they say that the enjoyment of this material world, it's all sour grapes. I don't want anything. Right? So, it is mentioned by the Acharya that this is also an exhibition of the same false ego, but in a different manner. The Ahankar manifesting slightly differently. So, sometimes we will say that these people make a big show of their renunciation. Because they are not getting happiness out of renunciation, therefore at least they should get recognition out of renunciation. So, therefore they will give a TV interview after renouncing. Yes, this man, I have renounced everything. They will come with a big dadi and then they will sit and then they will give press interviews. And then they'll have one chamcha or some secretary saying that, you know, Baba, he was a very rich man, but now he renounced everything. Like that. And then the media will also interview and then publish it to you. And there they get the satisfaction of false ego, manifesting through recognition. Like that. So, His Holiness Devamrita Swami gives a very profound example. And you know, we can never forget that example. He says, I'm walking outside Citibank and suddenly I say, I renounce Citibank. And Citibank never belonged to you in the first place. There is a question of you renouncing anything, right? So he always gives this example. I have heard two or three classes of his, he has given this example consistently. So naked we come and naked we go. Where is the question of, if nothing is anyway owned by us, Itavashyam, Itamsaram, somebody else is supreme controller and everything belongs to him, where, what is it that I am renouncing? So the Mayavadis are not able to understand this. So such a person who is not able to enjoy the material world, but has this desire inside his heart to enjoy, becomes wicked, cruel, angry towards others. Ichha dvesha samudhena. So the false ego manifesting like that. And therefore in the scriptures also we find many times that the so-called sadhus, they are sometimes engaged in cursing this person and that person. Scripture is full of curses also, right? It is full of blessings also. Ashirvad is also there as a part of Mangalakaran. But there is curse also which is there. So somebody is cursing someone, you become a snake, you become a toad, you become a monkey, and so on and so forth. Okay. So, why does this happen? That this cursing tendency, where does it come from? So, Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, it is mentioned that when you prematurely try to renounce, despite latent material desires in the heart, then that manifests in anger. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 62 also, we have the famous verse, which is called as Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsam, Sangat Teju Pajayate, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Krodha Vijayate. So this attachment turns to lust and lust turns to anger at the end of the day. So desire, if fulfilled, it becomes greed. And if desire it becomes unfulfilled, then it becomes anger. So, and when this anger comes, then we curse at the slightest provocation. Everywhere curses are flying. Of course, it is mentioned that Narad Muni's curse is not that kind of curse. Narad Muni's curse is actually liberating. As Gurujan Prabhu last year was telling us in the retreat, that is, what are we saying? It was a very nice statement he said. This is a blessing in disguise or something like that, right? Those who attended Gurujan Prabhu's retreat, he was saying this curse is actually a blessing. And he told a very nice sentence, I'm not able to recall. You remember Chaitanya? Okay. So these artificial renouncers, okay, these Mayavadis, they may even cross over the entire existence, material existence. But then what happens? It is very nicely mentioned about these Mayavadis. Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, chapter 4, text 11, 11.4.11. Very nice verse. It says, Shut Trit Trikala Guna Maruta Jaiva Sashnan Asman Apara Jaladhin Ati Tirya Kechit. Shut means hunger, Trit means thirst. Trikala Guna means manifestations of the three phases of time, such as heat, cold, rain, and whatever. And Maruta means wind, and Jaiva means the tongue. So, the translation is like this, that some men practice severe penances to cross beyond our influence, which is like an immeasurable ocean with endless waves of hunger, which is shut, of thirst, of heat, cold, and other conditions brought about by the passing of time, such as the sensuous wind and the urges of the tongue and sex organs. Some people are able to control all these things. Okay. But the next verse, Asman apara jaladhin atitirya kechi. Apara means limitless. Jaladhin means ocean. And atitirya, having crossed over all this, kechi, some person, what happens to them after crossing over? Krodhasya yanti vipalasya vasam padehor majjanti duschara tapascha vrithostra janti. Krodhasya means of anger. Yanti, they come, vifalasya, which is fruitless. So despite they having attained control over all this, nevertheless, although crossing this ocean of sense gratification through severe penances, such persons foolishly drown in a cow's hoof print when conquered by useless anger. So despite all this, controlling over tongue, sex, desire, everything, control over anger does not go. And therefore they drown in the hoof print. Thus they exhaust the benefit of their difficult austerities and everything goes to vain. So they fall into a small puddle. After crossing over the ocean of material existence, they go and drown in a chulluvar cow puddle of water, which is nothing but the anger or the false ego. So all their tapobal is finished because of that. And despite tolerating all the lust, their false ego does not enable them to go ahead because of ahankar. So this false ego can also be seen in devotees. That is the final discussion for today. And how is it seen in devotees, this false ego? Not only in materialists. So when a devotee comes to the temple for the very first time and starts, especially in the neophyte stages, so the devotee comes, he has got nice prasad in the temple, he starts staying in the same house as other devotees. So many things will happen. And this devotee is nicely being taken care of by someone. Somebody is cooking for the devotee, somebody is helping the devotee get a job and so on and so forth. So everything is very nice for the devotee. And therefore the devotee starts enjoying, yes, Krishna consciousness is blissful. And the devotee also starts enjoying the taste of chanting on top of that. Right? And devotion service. So he has given up tea, coffee, onion, garlic, whatever, alcohol, everything has been given up. So very nicely the devotee is coming in now and enjoying. So there is a lot of pampering also. Even if the devotee is committing some sin, the senior devotee says, "Nahi nahi, Prabhu, theek hai, it's okay. Don't worry. Hota hai. So nobody is really, coming and chastising right now. Right now the initial days of marriage are there. Like that. So, even if the girl is looking so attractive, wife to the husband and the husband to the wife, that they overlook each other. Oh, it's okay, I love you, darling. It's okay. Okay. But after 5 years in marriage, you know what happened. Right? So, like that, initially the devotee is coming, everybody is pampering, his faults are being overlooked. So there is total enjoyment. On top of that, Klesha Agni is happening. Relief from material distress, which is the first characteristic of bhakti. So how can something go wrong? Right? But gradually what happens, as the devotee now hears, listens, comes to Srimad Bhagavatam, listens everything, gradually he starts thinking, the mood comes, now I am beginning to learn everything. I think now I have got a handle on the principles of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So therefore now I know little bit, I know what is right and what is wrong. So, okay, I mean, see, you have groomed me, I understand, you brought me in Krishna consciousness, Prabhu. But now I know what I have to do. I have been in the movement now already. Now you don't tell me, you know, don't keep long hair, you know, with shave off your mustache and all, fine, so boy, it's okay, I know, I'll do it. And it gets irritating, the devotee gets irritated by these small instructions, come for morning program. But Prabhu, it's okay, you know, I'm chanting 16 rounds and all, you are just forcing me to come for morning program. You should not force anyone like that. So this is called irritation. So gradually what happens, earlier everything was very nice, but now when we are on our own, then the false ego starts playing. And then, when what happens, despite this we continue our endeavor, so slowly what happens, we start again learning some new kartal, new mridangam, because of the devotees association, and therefore, you know, we get recognition also. Who is that Prabhuji who played kartal yesterday, that mridanga? Oh, that Prabhu. Then people say, Prabhu, you sing very nicely, you play so nice mridanga. Ah, no Prabhu. All your blessings and all that. But internally, you know, the heart is jumping, yes, you have glorified me. Right? And then we will go also and ask someone after the, you know, how was my mridanga today? So just, I want to improve, that's why I'm okay. No Prabhu, you have done wonderful. Oh, really? Okay, thank you Prabhu. So all these kind of, you know, thoughts will come inside the mind. But what will happen, we are living inside the inside the cage of these thoughts, and gradually our mind is thinking that we are advancing very nicely, but deep inside we know that we are what we are. There are only two people who know what we are. One is ourselves and Paramatma. The whole world we can cheat, right? But we inside, we know what we are. So therefore, from inside we cannot cheat ourselves, from outside we are able to cheat everyone. Therefore there is unhappiness inside the heart. Therefore now when we see some devotee who is genuinely doing his sadhana, who doesn't have any desire for recognition or pride, and then we start getting envious of that devotee. Now how is he, you know, like that? And why I am not like that? Therefore we get angry at that devotee, because that devotee is genuinely, you know, doing sincere sadhana and advancing. Because we constantly compare. Okay? So therefore this envy starts coming from within. Srila Prabhupada said that the real test of our Krishna consciousness, of our false ego, does not come inside a Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay. It will come when the test comes in our life, when testing times come, and at that time how we respond to those challenges, that differentiates the chaff from the wheat. Okay. So, when suffering, one comes, as long as one comes to the acceptance that all the suffering are because of your mercy, my dear Lord, thank you Krishna, then it is fine. Otherwise, then one's motive will always be impure and one will always be subjugated to the false. Now how does, you know, realization will come is mentioned in 1.2.21, the very first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, text 2, chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. There it is said, Bhibhyate hridaya granthis, chidyante sarva samasya, shiyante chasya karmani, drishta evanatmanishware. The translation is, thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut into pieces. The chain of fruitive activities is terminated and one sees the self as the master. Slowly, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, what happens is, we come to the platform of Naishiki Bhakti. Okay? So for example, there is a verse if you all know. Narayanan Namaskrityam Naranjayava Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vasam Tato Jayamudhire Nashta Prayasa Bhadrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhavati Bhakti Naishiki. Which means what happens? That as we keep on attending Srimad Bhagavatam class, as we keep on following, you know, serving the devotees, the person Bhagavata, then all that is troublesome to the heart is gone. And devotional life is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay? So though we become irrevocable, which means we will not fall down now from 16 rounds, and we can still fall down, but normally it will not happen. Come to a fixed nishtha platform. But still this envy is something which will still be there. There is still something, this small portion which is still left over. Okay, and therefore it is mentioned in this verse 1.2.21, Drishta Atma Nishware. So that is the next stage, even after that Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya verse, which is saying that one must realize that he is the master and I am the servant. And once that servant mood really comes inside the heart, we really internalize that mood, then bibhyante hridaya granthi. Then the knot of false ego is broken. Otherwise, despite being in devotional service, knowing the philosophy of a servant, we will say that philosophy is correct, but I am not correct. Like that. Okay. So then chidyante sarva samshaya. Once we have this mood that I am servant, we internalize that, then all misgivings are cut to pieces. And shiyante chashya karmani. Chain of fruitive activities is then terminated. So only when drishta, atmanishvare, unless we are free from envy, we cannot cooperate. Unless we get rid of false ego, any service that we do can never be for our own welfare or for the welfare of anyone. Lord Shiva mentioned that the greatest service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that one can do is to take up suffering for the benefit of others. And that is the culmination of our false ego. For example, we see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was this personality on whom, Vasudeva Ghosh, on whom His Holiness Bhakti Tirth Swami modeled his desire on. So Bhakti Tirth Swami Maharaj said, he just prayed that, my Lord, one year before his disappearance, he prayed to the Lord, saying that, O Lord, may all the sins of this world come upon me, he said. And within a few months after he prayed like that, His Holiness Bhakti Tirth Swami Maharaj was afflicted with cancer. So he enacted the pastime of cancer and he left his body within that, within the span of 1 year. So this is actually the symptom of an Uttama Adhikari, where completely the false ego has gone. So there is no external thing that, I want to help other devotees and gain their recognition or whatever. This is purely an internal prayer to the Lord that please let the sins upon all our, everyone who is sitting here come upon me. So nobody knows also you prayed like that and then you have cancer. Right? And some foolish people outside will also say, maybe, this person, because of his earlier sins in before his Krishna consciousness, he is having karma. This is a nonsensical concept and we can make aparadha. So, you can even be misunderstood for having got cancer like that by people who are seen outside. But then they don't care about anything because the only desire is to take on the sins of everyone. So, this is the ultimate elimination of false ego. When we think that I am just a servant and I am meant to serve everyone, in whatever way, such that they can come back to you, my dear Lord. So, when I noted down all these points for the lecture, and this morning, Pravardhan Acharya Prabhu was there, he was chanting with me, and I was telling him, I am feeling very happy that, this class, so many points have come, and I am feeling very content that such a nice, wonderful set of points have come together. And then, I realized that this was nothing but a congratulations, which is given to be my own false ego. So false ego can attack even when doing something like this, some activity. Thank you very much for your patience here. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, jai 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 Gautama.